You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in for this weekend's Best of the Todd Albaugh Show. This is Aaron, Todd's producer. I'm hanging out with some of the rest of the Zahmer Zoo, including my niece, Gracie.
Hello.
We're up north fishing, so I hope that you're enjoying your weekend as well. Up first, we're going to listen to part of Tuesday's show, where Todd talked to Kyle LaFond, a successful Wisconsin business owner who has a lot to share about how the Trump administration's tariffs are affecting all of our wallets and the dangers that the cuts to the Corporation of Public Broadcasting might bring. Give it a listen.
He is Kyle LaFond, founder and president and CEO of Natural Contract Manufacturing in American Province and a member of Main Street Alliance here in Wisconsin. Kyle, good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us.
Todd, great to be here. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, it's our pleasure, and it means a lot to me personally because one of the things we try to do this show is take these issues that are international or national, and nothing wrong with national news and coverage, but I think for a lot of Wisconsinites out there, what I hear when I go on the road and listen to folks is they say, Todd, I just can't do it because it's overwhelming and depressing. And I can say, I get it. So one of the things we like to do is put this in a Wisconsin context. And you being a small business owner here in Wisconsin, I want to talk a little bit about these Trump tariffs, new round of them, allegedly. We'll see if it happens this time, going back into effect here in a few days. So I appreciate a real discussion about that. But as we do with everybody who's new here on the show, Mr. LaFond, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the manufacturing world.
Yeah, thanks. It's a long and very twisted story, actually.
That's great.
I actually began my career with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, where I worked as a wildlife biologist. In that role, I spent a lot of time in schools talking to kids about principles of wildlife management, biology, chemistry, you name it. I really enjoyed that aspect of the job, so went back and got another degree. And then I taught middle school and high school science for a number of years. Wow. When I was teaching, I developed this project where I taught my students, primarily in the middle school environment, how to make their own personal care and wellness products using primarily household ingredients. You know, I was sick of all my my younger students basically dousing themselves with Axe body spray and other products that were loaded with all kinds of chemicals and preservatives. So after developing this project in class, I basically stole all of my students' best ideas and launched my first company.
That's great.
Yeah, the company is called American Provenance. It's still around. It's a deodorant brand you're going to find primarily on Amazon at this point. And then during the pandemic, we launched a second division called Natural Contract Manufacturing. So now, not only do we make products for our own brand, but we make products for about 60 other brands and a number of celebrities and athletes and influencers that are all looking to capitalize on, again, their name and popularity.
I think this is great. And we just did a show last week out in Southwest Wisconsin at Six Springs Farm, Joe Thomas's venture in Hall of Fame beef. And he was talking about this is basically what led him going from football into farming. As he said, you know, as I aged in football and got closer to the end of my career in the NFL, my body physically and mentally was taking its toll. And a lot of this was from the crap that I was, you know, I consider myself a healthy guy. I'm paraphrasing, he said. But he said, I wanted to provide healthy food, meat for my family and friends. And that's how it started. It sounds much the same way your impetus was watching what your students were putting on their bodies, chemicals, and saying, hey, how can we do this better, more naturally?
That's exactly it. And as an aside there, Joe's actually a good buddy. I've been out there to his farm a few times. Yep. I've been out there looking for morels and ramps in the spring and even screwing around on other occasions. So, yeah, Joe is a wonderful example. What a great ambassador for the state of Wisconsin.
You know, you nailed it on the head. And what I said, I'm writing a piece right now on it, a column about Dunn. And, yeah, part of the takeaway, you know, the story, you know, he said, I'm not going to the draft, even though I'm number three, because I'm going to fish with my dad. But what really struck me, having the privilege and honor to hang out with him for 2 hours on the air and off, was how truly invested He is in farming in Southwest Wisconsin. This isn't some, oh, I'll live in a city far away and come out here once a month and take photos. No. He's on the gator. He's on the tractor. He's sawing down trees. He's feeding cattle. Whatever he has to do. And he's really invested in the economic growth of Southwest Wisconsin.
That's just it. I mean, people don't give Joe enough credit. I think the one word I really like to use when describing Joe is sophisticated. You know, and you wouldn't think that word in regards to a professional football player, but Joe is a very sophisticated guy, kind of a real Renaissance man. You know, he's one of those guys where my grandfather always told me you should never trust anybody that doesn't have calluses on their hands. And Joe understands that. He goes out and he gets the work done. So more power to him.
You don't have to disclose this if you don't want to. I'm just curious. How do you know him? Through football or what?
Through Chris Borland, actually. Chris and I have been friends for many, many years.
Really?
Our circles of friends have just kind of intertwined and gotten a chance to meet a few other folks through Chris and expand my network there. And Joe is just a wonderful guy. And again, I can't believe we're fortunate enough to have him as an ambassador here for the state, and especially Southwest Wisconsin.
Small world indeed. We're talking to Kyle LaFond, the founder, president, and CEO of Natural Contract Manufacturing and American Province. So back to your story, I think that as a small business person who did this for all the right reasons, got into this for the betterment of health and people, now you're looking, when you sell your, I'm going to ask you two things. A, where are you selling your product most to? And B, where are you getting the, I'll use the word ingredients or materials to produce and ship your product? And then how are these Trump tariffs going to affect your business?
Yeah, great question. So there was a time prior to the pandemic where you could find our own branded products, American Provenance products, on about 10,000 shelves nationwide. That included 1,400 Walmarts, a whole bunch of Whole Foods regions, and pretty much every significant regional grocer you could imagine. During the pandemic, of course, some brick and mortar really just fell apart. You know, if people were going to the grocery store, they were going to buy foods. They weren't going to buy personal care and wellness products. So at that point, we pulled out of brick and mortar. Now the brand itself is online only. So just on Amazon and a handful of other sites. Most of our clients are online only as well. A lot of these folks don't have the resources to take their product and put it on a shelf somewhere. Putting a product on a store shelf is very, very expensive, very, very time consuming. So a lot of folks can just turn to Amazon or Fair or other online outlets to sell their goods. In terms of our inputs and how the tariffs are affecting us, because we're making products for all kinds of other brands and athletes, celebrities, and whatever else, and especially since we're in the personal care and wellness space, we get a lot of our ingredients, a lot of our inputs from overseas. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about Thailand, we're talking about China, we're talking about Indonesia, some of our stuff's from South America as well. You know, if you're talking about personal care and wellness products, a lot of it tends to be a coconut oil and shea butter. Last time I looked, there's not a lot of palm trees here in Wisconsin.
No.
So for us, what we're seeing, even a lot of our scents, our essential oils, of course, those are all distilled down from plants that are primarily in temperate zones around the equator, right? Mm. So what we found with a lot of our ingredients, there were significant price increases overnight when tariffs first started talked about. And some of our ingredients, I can tell you that pretty much overnight, they just about doubled, which is just crazy when you think about it. When we talk about tariffs, a lot of folks tend to think about, you know, finished products. There's a lot more beyond that. A lot of manufacturers here stateside, we get our inputs, we get our raw materials, our ingredients from foreign nations, and we have to pay those tariffs to get those products here to make the products you enjoy at home. We can't absorb all those costs, so of course we're going to have to pass them on to the consumer. And so I think it's foolish for anybody to think that tariffs aren't going to affect the prices of American manufactured goods because, yeah, a lot of stuff that goes into American manufactured goods is acquired overseas.
Talking to Kyle LaFond here, founder and president and CEO of Natural Contract Manufacturing in American Province, based in beautiful Middleton, Wisconsin, just outside the Madison city limits where we are at. Kyle, how many roughly, so to speak, how many people do you employ in your businesses?
We're a small and lean operation. Right now, there's only four of us full-time permanent employees. And we do have upticks, and we do rely on some outside staffing to help us out. And during the summertime, I do have the privilege of having some of my friends and their kids help out when we're a little behind schedule, which is great. The summer is usually a very busy time for us. So having kids that are not enrolled in school and have some time on their hands to come help us out has been wonderful.
I think this is great because as I travel, I grew up originally in Center, Wisconsin, a town of 5,000 people. I have the privilege of being able to travel around for this show. We talk and listen to a lot of folks. I think that you're representative of so many small business people in this state. You think about the bakeries, the coffee shops, the cafes, the woodworkers, the photographers, the people that take our photographs for kids' senior pictures. They're not employing hundreds of people. It's a couple of families, but all of them added up together have a huge impact because my guess is, Kyle, you're also spending locally in your community. And so it's a ripple effect, and not enough people understand that that's the backbone, agree or disagree, of Wisconsin small business.
That's just it. I mean, think about over 90% of Wisconsin businesses are small businesses, and those are 50 employees or less. Mm-hmm. So you think about, you know, you walk down Main Street, and like you said, you look at a cafe or a bakery or a butcher shop, that's three or four people. And those are folks that are making a living, putting back in the community. You know, we want to continue to spend our dollars here as close to home as possible. We're not huge proponents of purchasing stuff on Amazon, even though our clients utilize it as a selling format. Don't get me started about monopolies and right. All kinds of stuff like that. That's another conversation for another day, but happy to have that one. There is, I think, a growing sentiment, especially among young people. They get it. They want their dollars to stay local. They don't want to ship it overseas. So I think we're going to see a sea change here over the course of the next, who knows, 10, 12 years, when people really wake up and realize that, you know, this consumer spending that we've gone crazy with since the pandemic needs to change and come back to Main Street.
About a couple minutes left here before we have to step away. Then we'll finish up on the other side. But again, to get back to the impacts that these tariffs are going to have, agree or disagree, it's not just the tariffs themselves. It's this complete uncertainty for a small business owner like yourself. How do you plan for that?
That's a great question as well. So we're always onboarding new clients. And so every year we anticipate we've got 20-25% of our clients turning over. Either they go out of business or they get too big and go onto a larger contract manufacturer that has more advanced capabilities than what we have. Yeah. What we're finding is that with all this talk of tariffs and all this uncertainty, all these folks that were talking about launching brands or products earlier this year, guess what? They've kind of completely fallen off. They either postponed or delayed or decided not to pursue business whatsoever. You know, anytime we have this amount and this kind of uncertainty, it's not good for any business. Yeah. You know, if you're thinking about launching something and you don't have solid answers on funding, or you don't have solid answers on what interest rates or consumer demand or the threat of recession are going to be or tariffs, those are all things that potential business owners need to keep in mind. And adding those up, a lot of folks have decided to shy away from launching brands or expanding product portfolios.
And I think that's the untold story here in the national headlines is that, you know, I had a couple of different small coffee shops over the course of my life. I was in business with a couple of business partners. And it's like you just want to know one way or the other so you can plan. It's the uncertainty, I think, that kills you as a small business person because you don't know how much to have reserve. You don't know what the forecast for next year. It just locks you up.
That's exactly it. And as a business owner for the past 10 years, I can't believe it's been 10 years. But having a business for that long and going through my own trials and tribulations, you want those certainties.
Right.
That makes everything so much easier in terms of planning and execution. Anytime you have things that are unknown, that's why I always tell folks, the only thing I'm really scared of is not knowing what I don't know. Right. That may sound crazy. No,
I get
it. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. I think a lot of folks are in that situation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree 100%. We got to step away to a little business, as they say. We're going to come back, talk more with Kyle LaFond on the other side, not just about small business and tariffs in Wisconsin, but also about PBS and the implications of the cuts to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Don't go anywhere. It's the All Ball Show across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Thanks for sticking with us on the Best of the Todd Allbaugh Show. Here's the rest of Todd's conversation with Kyle LaFond.
Wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allbaugh Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 8 minutes now before the hour of 3 o'clock at the top of the hour. ABC or CBS News, followed by a check of weather. Mike Clemens, our great sports reporter, with a report from Packers training camp, and also the Brewers continue their winning streak back underway in Atlanta tonight. Brewers now 3 games ahead of the dreaded Chicago Cubs. That's fantastic news, Michael. I'll have updates on that. And then hour 2 of what's worse coming up in hour 2, grocery store items. What's worse, store-bought grocery tomatoes or non-dairy milk? We'll discuss those hot topics in hour number 2. But right now, something more serious. Kyle LaFon joins us via StreamYard from here in Dane County, the founder and president and CEO of Natural Contract Manufacturing and American Providence. Now, Kyle, before we get into PBS, many of your products here, natural products, skincare, healthcare products. Now, what should a guy like me, who tends to be sweaty, unfortunately, I mean, Right Guard is my go-to. It seems to work the best. What sort of natural deodorants should I actually be using that are more healthy and not so chemically prone?
Well, I'll share with you the same information I've been sharing with folks for many, many years. Mm-hmm. You should never, ever, ever wear an antiperspirant. You should always wear a deodorant. Yes, there's a big difference there. And so with antiperspirants, they often contain some type of chemical, usually aluminum or metal, to basically clog your pores to prevent you from sweating. Mm-hmm. But what happens when you sweat, you're also expelling all kinds of toxins from your body, right? So if you're clogging your pores, those toxins and chemicals tend to accumulate in these very sensitive areas around your lymph nodes. So you want to sweat. Sweating is healthy. It's your body's way of cooling itself down, but also expelling all these minerals and toxins and everything else. And so if you're clogging your pores, those are staying in your system. And you don't want to do that. So deodorants are great. Deodorants are just meant to basically mask whatever your body odor may be, where antiperspirants, again, block your pores. And so never, ever, ever wear an antiperspirant. Always wear a deodorant.
There you go. I've learned something new already today. That's fantastic. So, and this is great. These products, these natural products like yours, are being manufactured right here in the state of Wisconsin. I appreciate the discussion prior to on the Trump tariffs. I wanted to get into something else that came out of the White House last week that I know you're the president, I believe, the Friends Board of PBS here in Wisconsin. Did I get that right?
That's correct. That's the 501c3 that is responsible for fundraising for PBS Wisconsin.
So it was announced last week that by the Trump administration, well, I guess by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, that they were going to shut down essentially by the end of September because of not just the cuts in the Trump reconciliation bill, but also the fact that Congress, Republican-led Congress, as directed by Trump, clawed back over $1 billion in previously allocated and approved funds for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Tell us just, if you will, a little bit, Kyle, what impact in reality is this going to have for places like Wisconsin Public Television and Wisconsin Public Radio?
Well, it's going to be significant. I mean, there's no way to hide that whatsoever. We were hoping for a much different outcome. We had some, what I thought was very good news heading into discussions around the rescission package. Unfortunately, those did not come to fruition. So what that's going to mean with this cut in funding is right now, Wisconsin Public Media, we get about 10% of our annual budget from the federal government. And so we're going to have to make that up somehow. One thing that we've seen not only here in Wisconsin, but nationwide, are a lot of these stations putting together some very aggressive campaigns and basically bring on more dollars from their friends, their sponsors, and just fans. So now more than ever, we're going to have to rely on all of our supporters that have been behind PBS for years and years to really kind of help us out even more than they ever have before. So we are doing some restructuring. We're looking at some programs, but a lot of this is going to come down to alternative ways to raise funds through fundraising efforts and maybe some unique and novel ideas that have been on the back burner for a while, but may be coming to fruition here in the next couple of years.
Unfortunately, about 3 minutes left. We'd love to have you back on another time if you're willing. But in the time we have left here, it's not just PBS, and those are very, very important in my opinion, but it's also local radio across the state of Wisconsin that receives some of those Corporation for Public Broadcasting funds. It could be native radios on out of reservations and in parts of Wisconsin that don't get a lot of media over the air because of topography, geography. But it's also just community radio, folks that rely on that local news. This is going to impact them. Am I correct?
That's just it. So the Corporation for Public Broadcasting realistically is more or less a clearinghouse. So they're the ones that receive the funds from the federal government, and then they go ahead and dictate how much funding goes to each particular television station, radio station, what have you. So there are some stations out there in primarily rural areas, you mentioned tribes, that may get 40, 50, maybe even 60% of their funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So with that funding being cut, guess what? That means a loss of on-air talent. That means a loss of programs. That means a lot of repetitive nature. That means a loss of a lot of services that folks come to rely on. People don't realize it, but public media touches every corner of the state of Wisconsin. You know, we're here to not only educate and inform, but also protect the first warn system, the safety system that alerts for potential or severe weather. That's all broadcast first by public radio and public television. So these are going to have some dramatic consequences in terms of health, safety, communication, education, and just community.
Kyle, 1 minute left. What have I not asked you that you want to make sure people know either about the tariffs or about PBS?
That's a good question as well. I think one of the things that has been on my mind lately is, what does the end of the year look like? You know, as a business owner, I'm always trying to forecast and look ahead. And there are some signs out there that are a little concerning to me. You know, way back when, I had an old mentor tell me that if you really want to know what's going on, talk to the truck drivers. Mm-hmm. Don't listen to the folks that have the fancy degrees from the Ivy League schools. Talk to a truck driver.
Yep.
So, I've always taken that to heart, and I've always done it. One of the things that was shocking to me just last week, I had a gentleman show up to basically drop off a load at our warehouse. Gentleman I had never seen before, and I'm familiar with all of our truck drivers. I asked him what was going on. He said, well, we had to furlough a bunch of drivers. I've actually been behind the desk for the past 8 years. This is my first time behind the wheel since. So if these trucking operations and logistic companies are going through furloughs now, that's a bad sign. You know, I also used to hear that anytime you saw four or more semis per 10 cars on the interstate, you knew things were going well. Three or less, not so hot. So keep an eye on that for the rest of the year here.
Kyle, you nailed it. One of the best educations of my life was going from Chicago to Oklahoma City to San Antonio with Brooke Dobbs on a long-haul truck experience. They are 100% right. You nailed it. Kyle LaFon, thanks for being a part of what makes Wisconsin great. We'd love to talk to you again soon. Have a great day.
Up next, we're going to listen to part of Wednesday's show, where Brian Van Hooker of Cracked.com talks about King of the Hill, both the original and the new reboot that's coming out. Thanks for sticking around on the Best of the Todd Albaugh Show. We're now going to listen to a conversation with Brian Van Hooker of Cracked.com about King of the Hill.
Welcome back to the Todd Albaugh Show, live on location here in beautiful La Crosse, Wisconsin, on the banks of the Black River, the backwaters to the Mississippi River. We are the Black River Beach Neighborhood Center. We were here in the first hour covering the Fusion Voting Seminar. Many thanks to the hosts who put this on today. Leader Ethics here in Wisconsin, led by Lee Rosh, and also the United Wisconsin folks, co-chairs Dale Schultz and Dave Mahoney. Many thanks to them as well. And to Trigvi Olson. Time to lighten things up just a little bit here. And many apologies. It's only gotten worse, Somers, as the show has gone on. The cicadas in the background, I'm not sure if they enjoy some afternoon delight, if that's the height of the mating period for cicadas, but it's gotten louder as the show has gone on. Have you been able to hear that?
Yeah, when we first connected, I wasn't hearing it. And then just slowly, every segment, it's getting louder.
I'm fearful that at any moment I'm going to turn around, there's going to be a cicada right behind me looking to, well, anyway, moving on, time once again to bring back one of our favorite people from the great folks at Cracked.com, joining us via StreamYard, one of the great reporters and writers there, Brian Van Hooker. Mr. Van Hooker, how the heck are you?
It's hard to hear you, Todd, over the cicadas. It's nice to talk to you, too. I assume that's what you're asking.
Yes. I said you can plan for a lot of things, electricity, satellite coverage, sure. Wi-Fi, cover, so you don't get rained on, whatever. But I never considered, I should check with see what the cicada mating
hard
season
to cover
is.
For biblical plagues. That's really, right. Those but are the, harder.
But these are the times we live in. remind folks, it's been a while since you've been on the show. Glad to have you back. Remind folks where you're at and how you got into writing for Cracked.com, if you'd be so kind.
Yeah, I have. I'm the senior features writer at Cracked.com. I've been there for a few years now, two or three maybe. Mm. I used to write for a place called Mel Magazine, and when they shut down, I had done a piece about the Onion, their 9/11 issue, and I knew some people who connected me over at Cracked, and it kind of just worked out, and I've been there ever since, and I do lots of, like, pop culture reporting, lots of some listy stuff, things like that, but also, like, lots of interviews, things like that. Like, we had a big thing for King of the Hill, like, you know, right now we as the return of the show, so I talked to, like, the showrunner and a few of the stars and the writer, so, like, it was really... those are the kinds of things I do there.
So, lots of interviews. So, great segue here into King of the Hill. This is an animated series. Was it on Fox, right?
It was on Fox back in the day. Now it's on Hulu.
Oh, now it's on Hulu. So, I mean, full disclosure, I saw maybe, I don't know, a dozen-ish full episodes, another dozen-ish partial episodes. So I'm familiar, but for people that might not remember the show, fill people in, the premise of King of the Hill, when it ran originally, and what's bringing it back.
Well, I mean, the premise is kind of like, there's not a huge premise to the show. It's about this guy, Hank Hill, who lives in Texas, a fictional town in Texas called Arlen, and it's just about him and his friends and his family, and this very kind of low concept show that basically could have been live action had they wanted to, but it ended up being an animated show, and it's from Mike Judge, who did Beavis and Butthead and Office Space. It was just a great show that lasted 14 seasons. It went away in, say, 2013-ish, maybe give or take, and it had been gone since, and after years and years of talking about a reboot, maybe I think like 8 years since we first heard about a potential reboot, it came back and it was great. I'm somebody who's kind of not always for these reboots and sequels and everything, just because I feel like I don't need endless amounts of the same thing. But I gotta tell you, for fans of the original, I'd be very surprised if they weren't happy with the new one, because it's great. It's really strong.
So is it and keep me honest here, because I don't want to bring politics too much into this, but the title character here, the main character, the patriarch of King of the Hill, he seems like he could have been kind of a borderline MAGA guy, kind of an outdoors macho dude, but also slightly self-aware enough to doubt himself as well. Is that an overreach?
I would say they specifically don't get directly into his politics in the show. It's clear, at least especially in the old version, that he is definitely a Republican. But if I were to have to categorize him anywhere where he is now, it's much more common sense, much more maybe like a Never Trumper kind of thing. It's hard to say exactly. They specifically kind of avoid that, but not in a way that feels forced. But he's definitely a kind of maybe more right than left, but also, or at least what that used to be, not so much what it is now. Also, very much like common sense, do the right thing, don't be mean to people. So in a way that was like very common sense back then feels a little bit more partisan now, which seems strange.
Yeah, I mean, it is strange. We're talking with Brian Van Hooker, senior features writer at Cracked.com, about his articles here. All right, Van Hooker, let's get into the first one here. Hank Hill's best grilling-related burns on King of the Hill.
Well, I mean, Hank Hill is a character who is, like, his job is, or at least back in the original take, he's retired in the new version. He was a seller of propane and propane accessories. He was very fervently in favor of propane and no other source of heat for grilling. This one article I did was just a collection of him throwing shade at other sources of cooking. A big one is charcoal. There's an episode of the show where his family members secretly get hooked on charcoal and start like eating char grilled meats behind his back, and he's very upset about it. He feels betrayed.
All right, here we go.
You brought charcoal into our house.
I didn't know what it was. Luann asked me to hold it for her. I thought it was drugs.
There's soot under my boy's nails. You don't get that from a clean-burning fuel.
You don't get the rich, smoky flavor either.
Shut your mouth. Now, we're going to sit here and pray.
Hank Hill from King of the Hill here on Charcoal. Now, this is funny to me in particular because last night I had to go down to beautiful Monroe, Wisconsin, and friends of mine went together, and we bought a quarter steer and a quarter hog, and we had to go to Hosley Meats and pick up the meat, and then we took it to Kurt and Florcy's big freezer, and Kurt says, let's grill a fresh burger, and he has a gas grill, but he's back into charcoal. And he lights. He has a tank of propane and like a flamethrower. I guess he used it on weeds. And he fired that son of a gun up and just. And the thing was on fire, ready to go in like 3 minutes. It was crazy. Oh, wow. And I hadn't had a charcoal burger in years. And to the point of the character there, it does taste better.
I gotta say, I'm fine with both. But, I mean, I do really love a good charcoal burger. Like, something that's just a little bit burnt. I really right? do love that. That flavor's great. Yeah.
All right. Next item here. Looking at...
I was going to skip ahead. There was a great episode of the show that also featured George Foreman, the late George Foreman, where he had a guest appearance in the show where Hank kind of was polite, but also made clear that he didn't take George Foreman's grills all that seriously. That was another one where he kind of pokes fun at George Foreman's grill. Anyway, I'll let you guys play the clip.
All right, here's King of the Hill on the George Foreman grill.
How'd you feel about carrying my grill in your shop?
Sorry, we have a strict policy about that. No novelty grills.
Novelty grill?
Yeah, you know, no offense, but your grill is kind of like an iron.
You calling my grill an iron? I've been hit below the belt before, but nothing like this.
I think it's a great product for dieters or little girls who want to play barbecue, but you can't compare it to a propane-powered grill.
Fights on!
What? No.
I said fights on. What's the matter? Smelling all that propane cause you brain damage? That's what it does, you know.
No, that is not accurate. Those studies were all done on sick monkeys. And at least my grill isn't sold in housewares.
Thank you. And was that actually the late, great George Foreman doing his
that
own
That was
vocal?
Him. You got to give him some love for like being so willing to poke fun of himself, because that was right. definitely him.
Well, and that was the thing about George Foreman is, I mean, he used to go on Letterman all the time, and he was a salesman. It didn't matter whether it was self-deprecating. Hey, if it meant selling more of his product, he'd do it, right?
Oh, yeah. He was a character, for sure. He was very good-spirited in that one, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was also an episode where he pokes fun at Mesquite with his neighbor. I'll just leave that one to Hank, but that one's very funny, too.
All right, very good. Here's Hank Hill on Mesquite Grilling.
Howdy, Con.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Here you go. I thought you might enjoy 7.5 gallons of pure premium propane.
Are you kidding? No, I cook with mesquite. Give meat nice taste of wood.
And I cook with propane. Gives meat nice taste of meat.
Thank you. Very opinionated on his grilling there.
Yeah, and then there's another example of this. And this is something I sincerely agree with on whether or not it's okay to have a burger well done, or a steak well done for that matter. So this was Hank's take on that, which of course, obviously, it's not okay. Like, that's, you're ruining it. So
here we go. Anyway. Hank Hill on burgers. Here we are.
Firm, but with a little give. Yep, these are medium rare.
What if somebody wants theirs well done?
We ask them politely yet firmly to leave.
That's really funny. I'm somebody who does not like my meat well done, nor my burgers. But anyway, I like medium rare. That's a good way to, because then you can taste the flavor of the meat. Otherwise, it's
just
medium
rare everything pretty much.
Yeah, I'm totally well chicken. No, you want to make sure that's you don't want pink in the middle of your chicken.
Yeah, my bacon I prefer well done as well.
Right, exactly. What else we got? Any more on this particular story, Brian Van Hooker?
No. If you want to know more about, I mean, Hank, I mean, that's sort of him in a nutshell. Is his love for propane is his, like, it's a running joke throughout the series, but it's very sincere with the character. His love for propane.
Right. So. And who doesn't? And it is much cleaner and easier to do. You just fire up the old propane grill and you're set to go. Brian Van Hooker of Cracked.com, a senior feature writer there at Cracked. I'm going to come back here in a minute and talk about the other article, Brian. Four times King of the Hill's Dale Gribble was mostly right about a conspiracy theory. Now, is this from the old, from the original show, or is this new, something new in the new show?
From the original show, yeah.
Oh, from the original show. All right. All right, that's fine. I guess, what, a couple minutes yet, Zomer? Should we start this?
We have a minute.
Have a minute. All right. Well, we'll see. Well, let's save it, Brian Van Hooker, because we want to tease forward. That's what they tell me. They want more teasing forward. So you know, I'm not sure if I need to unbutton my top button.
Tease and look forward. Look at a 30-year-old show.
Look into the camera and say, "We're teasing you for Hank Hill.
Sure.
Come on back. It's cicada." By the way, the cicadas have suddenly gone quiet. I'm not sure if this is like their afterglow time or what.
They're responding to your teasing.
Yes. The once I start teasing, the cicadas shut up. Come on back. We'll wrap up the show with Brian Van Hooker live from Black River Beach Neighborhood Center on the banks of the Black River in La Crosse, Wisconsin, on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Thanks for sticking with us in the Best of the Todd Allbaugh Show. We're going to wrap things up with the rest of Todd's conversation with Brian Van Hooker.
In beautiful La Crosse, Wisconsin, on the banks of the Black River, the backwaters of the Ole Miss, as Chevy Chase called it in Vacation. The Ole Miss. Rusty, look at that. The Black River Beach Neighborhood Center here in beautiful La Crosse, Wisconsin. Many thanks to them for their hospitality. And also many thanks to Pat Kreitlow for being on the show today. Pat Kreitlow every morning from 6 until 9 on Mornings with Trygve Olson. No, it's Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, as it turns out. Trygve Olson, though, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. Many thanks for him as well. Lee Rosh from A Leader Ethics. One of the hosts for today's Fusion Voting Seminar, also former president of Western Wisconsin Technical College. Dale Schultz, former Republican Senate Majority Leader, co-chair of United Wisconsin, also a part of today's forum. And, of course, the aforementioned, the wonderful, the talented Mr. Brian Van Hooker, senior features writer for Cracked.com. Coming up at the top of the hour, CBS or ABC News, depending upon which station you're listening to. Weather update, a check of sports with a great sports reporter Mike Clemens, and then another edition of the Maggie Dawn Show every afternoon from 2 until 4, followed by Pete Schwabba and Nightlight. All right, Brian Van Hooker, talking King of the Hill, the series, highly acclaimed animated series, very successful back in the 2000s, back for another run, this time on Hulu. But back to the original series, you have this article entitled Four Times King of the Hill's Dale Gribble Was Mostly Right About a Conspiracy Theory. As they say, do tell, Brian Van Hooker.
So back, the character of Dale is a kind of crazy conspiracy theory guy. In the new show, they kind of took a little time to figure him out because he's basically like, you know, the culture from where the show was started in the late 90s and early 2000s, the culture's become much more conspiracy theory oriented. So they kind of...
Yes.
Tone down Dale a little bit by necessity because you couldn't have him, you know, storming the Capitol or anything. So they really kind of, but if you look back, in preparation for the show's re-release, we did a lot of looking back at the classic series, and I did some research on some of Dale's biggest conspiracy theories. I want to mention, too, a King of the Hill podcast helped me with this one. This guy's podcast called Bois, a King of the Hill podcast. That does interviews and a whole bunch of other stuff. Good guys. Mm-hmm. And I did some research on Dale's crazy conspiracy theories and which ones kind of ended up being true, if only by virtue of technology having advanced and us becoming more and more monitored. So anyway, here's Here's one. It's about weather control. This was one of Dale's conspiracy theories.
All right, here we go.
Hey, I know what's wrong with your truck. It's your quote-unquote pollution controls. I heard on talk radio you don't even need them. They're just an egghead government plot.
How is cutting down on pollution a government plot, Dale?
Open up your eyes, man. They're trying to control global warming. Get it? Global.
So what?
That's code for UN commissars telling Americans what temperature it's going to be in our outdoors. I say let the world warm up. See what Boutros-Ghali-Ghali thinks about that. We'll grow oranges in Alaska.
Dale, you giblet head. We live in Texas. It's already 110 in the summer, and if it gets 1 degree hotter, I'm going to kick your ass.
From King of the Hill. Listening to that, I mean, it's funny, but also it's funny because much like a lot of people that write comedy, satire, whatever, I mean, now that just seems like a conversation at the coffee shop.
Yeah, it's basically, it's a little antiquated in the idea that this would just be purely for humor and not just the normal way people talk. Although, to be honest, as crazy as it sounds, because weather control seems nuts to me, I mean, there was that story not that long ago saying that there's this company, oh God, I forget the name of it. Politico reported out that there's this company in California that was like going to test this cloud creation thing, which again seems science fiction crazy to me, but apparently there's real efforts to.
I mean, what is it called? Seed clouding or cloud seeding?
I don't know. I don't understand it. I think it still sounds like something Dale would say to me.
Right, exactly. All right, Brian Van Hooker from crack.com. Next clip here.
I'm assuming this is going to be the last one.
Yeah, we probably only have the last one.
I was going to skip ahead to one called The Beast because this basically describes our entire existence now. But back in 97 or whenever this aired, it seemed ridiculous. So anyway.
All right, here's The Beast clip from King of the Hill.
Well, I'm not going to let my credit and good name be done in by a damn computer error.
Computers don't make errors. What they do on purpose. By now, your name and particulars have been fed into every laptop, desktop, mainframe, and supermarket scanner that collectively make up the global information conspiracy, otherwise known as The Beast.
Dale, I'm having a problem with one videotape. Not some kind of high-tech boogeyman.
You just be careful. Computers have already beaten the communists at chess. Next thing you know, they'll be beating humans.
again, Brian Van Hooker, that could be a conversation at your local rally.
But still, I mean, it's pretty much common knowledge at this point that we're being monitored at all times via the internet.
Well, yeah, I know.
Alexa, everything else. So
I just are you on TikTok?
No. Thankfully, I've avoided that one.
Yeah. See, I have been up until about 2 weeks ago, and they said, no, you got to get on TikTok. So now I'm on TikTok, and now I feel like I'm just – the person that helped me set it up, I said, well, now the Chinese are going to know everything about me. And he looked at me and said, they already do.
Sure. But now they get to see Todd's TikTok dances, so that's better.
There ain't much there, I can tell you that. What's always there is great writing, great insight. You can find it at crack.com. Look for Brian Van Hooker's work there. He is the senior features writer at crack.com. Brian Van Hooker, thank you very much. We really appreciate you stopping by.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Always a pleasure.
That's all for this week's Best of the Todd Allbaugh Show. As always, if you want to hear the rest of the week's shows, you can go to civicmedia.us/shows or anywhere else you get your podcasts. And as Todd always says, whatever you believe in, whatever you're fighting for, do not give up. Keep banging your drum. We'll see you on Monday.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.